Thursday Farm News here on the Red River Farm Network. I'm Jamie Dickerman in studio. We'll also have a report from Randy Conan. He's at the International Crop Expo in Grand Forks. We'll hear from him in just a few moments. Farmers in northern Argentina facing hotter and drier conditions over the next 10 days, reversing recent moisture improvements and increasing stress on crops and livestock. Meanwhile, central Argentina's soil moisture remaining stable, though drier and warmer weather is expected in the coming days. In the far south, much-needed rain is forecast starting Friday night, offering relief to stressed crops. In Brazil, limited rainfall over the next week will lead to drying conditions for northern Sao Paulo. However, good conditions for soybean harvesting and safrinha crop planting expected. Wetter conditions will return to central west Brazil late this weekend, potentially slowing soybean harvests and delaying safrinha corn planting. Rainfall in southern Brazil will be scarce in the short term, but mid to late week could bring some moisture to replenish the topsoil. International Crop Expo continuing today in Grand Forks. Randy Conan reports.
We are here at the International Crops Expo and visiting with Dr. Andrew Friskop here at the what would be the small grain side of the meetings going on here. And Andrew, you talked about your disease risk management tools, some of the new things that are available. Tell me more about that.
Yeah, so like these opportunities, like sitting here at the ICE show today, is I have a chance to bounce some ideas off the growers in the group. And one thing I've been working on the last couple weeks, but presented today for the first time, is how do we look at disease risk in 5960 spring wheat varieties? And what I aimed to do was put all the varieties together, prioritize them based off importance, and I throw a value up there. And the value then can be used to influence how much risk do you want to have in a disease variety, what is the yield penalty or no yield penalty associated with it, and basically throw the data up there and help them use it as a suggestion, and they make a decision off of it.
And it's it depends a lot on different farms, I guess, too, but at the same time, it's highly encompassing, and the farmers seem to really absorb it.
Yeah, so I mean, right now we have six different wheat diseases that we score from a variety resistance, and some cases, one grower, one consultant is only worried about one disease. And I look at it from pathologies, I got to think about all the diseases. And how I've been prioritizing it, prioritize scab as being our number one disease in the state, and our number two disease from a variety risk is bacterial leaf streak, because we only have variety resistance against that disease. So, I mean, that's just kind of an example of taking the data, looking at it, and then trying to filter it into one achievable metric to help make a decision when it comes to, like, an important decision like varieties for next year.
One thing, too, you mentioned, too, is something with an average score is not bad.
Yeah, so one kind of the highlights of this is, you know, how much resistance do I need? And one thing I've noticed in the market right now is what I would say our average disease resistance is good. We have a lot of average disease varieties out there that have high yield potential, and regardless if it's very high disease or low disease environments, it's pretty stable. And I think that's a huge win when it comes to looking at the genetics, but also some of these new varieties that are coming out.
Will you have this tool available for farmers by the spring?
Yeah, my goal in a pipe dream is, after bouncing this off at a couple meetings, trying to get this into a usable format, or at least a central location where they can look at the data and kind of look at the interpretation of the data. And again, just another tool, just try to help out and hopefully have another really successful, you know, growing season, especially for wheat yields in the state.
All right, very good. Dr. Andrew Friskop here at the International Crops Expo. For the Red River Farm Network, I'm Randy Conan.
The ongoing tariff battle between the U.S. and its largest agricultural trading partners, concerning producers. Terrain's executive head John Newton said the difference maker will be the new ag secretary.
You know, the important thing is that you now got a secretary of agriculture that's been confirmed and can talk about how that could potentially impact agriculture and our future success in the export market in the Oval Office. That's the most important thing. And then, you know, in terms of, I think the challenge with it is really to try to understand what exactly is happening. There's been a lot of talk, to get people to the table to negotiate on a lot of other really tough issues. But knowing that if you put tariffs on, if they retaliate on U.S. agriculture, what that could look like. And again, that's why having a secretary in that seat now is really important.
Newton told a story of a similar situation during the last Trump administration.
When the first time Trump was president, the famous story is that Secretary Perdue took, when President Trump was thinking about pulling out of NAFTA, he took a map in and said, Mr. President, here's where agriculture does business. They do a lot of business with Canada. They do a lot of business with Mexico. and famously, we did not pull out of NAFTA. It's a pretty great story.
Many segments of U.S. agriculture are concerned about the possibility of the Trump administration implementing tariffs and the possibility of the reciprocal tariffs put in place by trade partners. Kurt Blade, Senior Vice President of the Association of Equipment Manufacturers, says a lot is going on in the industry.
Obviously, what the new administration brings in some excitement and brings in some opportunities and also brings in some challenges. And tariffs is certainly one of those where we have a disagreement with the administration. Previously, when we talked about tariffs during the previous Trump administration and the tariffs that were on steel and aluminum, we came out pretty strong saying that this is not as simple as you might think. It's a tool that we can use to rein some challenges in. But steel and aluminum, I mean, it takes three things to make a tractor. It takes labor, transportation, and steel.
It's basic economics. When input prices go up, prices for the finished products go higher as well.
Steel prices go up by 30%. It just kind of goes without saying that the prices has a ripple effect. And it's not as simple as wanting to buy only U.S.-made steel. It's a global market. So those tariffs do have a ripple effect. We're paying really close attention to that. We're paying really close attention to all of the tariffs, you know, including those that are involved with Canada and Mexico, knowing that we are in a global supply market. The amount of times that a piece of equipment or a piece of fertilizer or a piece of seed crosses the border before it ends up in the farmer's hands is pretty astounding. And so those tariffs do have an impact.
Senator Mitch McConnell of Kentucky, the former majority leader, said today he will not seek re-election next year. McConnell just turned 83. He recently suffered several health challenges, including a fall taken while leaving the Senate chamber earlier this month, and that has left him using a wheelchair. Many of McConnell's Republican colleagues, as well as Minority Leader Chuck Schumer and a handful of other Democrats, gave him a standing ovation after his speech. Their government workforce reduction is making headlines on a daily basis. Minnesota Senator Tina Smith said efficiencies can be made in government, but feels President Trump is taking a slash-and-burn approach.
The president isn't the king. He doesn't just get to make the law. His job is to implement the law, and Congress passes laws. And, you know, I work on laws all the time that I'm representing my constituents when I write those bills and when we get those bills passed. And as you know, I can hardly point to a thing that's happened in agriculture that hasn't had bipartisan support. This typically hasn't been a partisan thing. It has always been like, what do we need to do to help make sure that farming and agriculture and food and energy work for the people that are doing the work?
The Heritage Foundation's Project 2025 hopes to reshape government. The initiative calls for cuts to agriculture spending, including crop insurance, the ARC PLC programs, and the sugar program.
During the campaign, the president said, I have nothing to do with this Project 2025, agenda. And yet, you know, the guy who wrote it is now running the Office of Management and Budget, which is the agency that is responsible basically for the fiscal policy of the Trump administration. And you can see time after time after time the things that they proposed in Project 2025 being presented as the next thing that the administration wants to do. So it does feel a bit like a bait and switch, I think, to a lot of folks who were paying attention to that during the campaign.
Ranking members of the Senate and House Ag Committees are pressing the Trump administration for answers on international food aid disruptions. Senator Amy Klobuchar and Representative Angie Craig, both Minnesota Democrats, asking for an explanation following a stop work order that halted the delivery and distribution of hundreds of millions of metric tons of American-grown food aid, which could impact American farmers and U.S. ag markets. They also said with Food for Progress, buyers in other countries have bought U.S. commodities but haven't received them because of the pause. Speaking at the International Crop Expo in Grand Forks, University of Minnesota Extension Nutrient and Water Management Specialist Dr. Lindsay Pease said research is showing the benefits of having small grains in the crop rotation.
We really do see that having small grains as part of the rotation is helpful from that standpoint of measuring those soil health metrics. But I think the bigger message that I wanted to share with people is that the reason why it's important is because it actually is a time in the rotation where you have more flexibility. That earlier harvest time gives you time to think about integrating a cover crop or maybe trimming something a little bit different with your tillage.
Pease said small grain stubble may be a good alternative to cover crops in some cases.
We don't see wheat stubble affecting following crops in a negative way. The yields are coming back the same whether you leave that wheat stubble there or not over with the winter. I think that's a real win. And what we are seeing is with cover crops, you might want to, you can integrate those in a way that also benefits yield, but you have to be very careful in the spring to manage those and make sure that the cover crops don't overtake the growth and overshadow the crop that's growing.
Renewable Fuels Association head Jeff Cooper telling the 30th Annual National Ethanol Conference that ethanol saved the farm economy once and can do it again. Cooper says it's up to the new Trump administration whether to, quote, throw more money at the problem with more ad hoc payments for help farmers grind their way out of the crisis. One way is to support new year-round E15 legislation.
Just last Thursday, the year-round E15 legislation was reintroduced in both the House and Senate by a determined group of bipartisan lawmakers. They'll again be looking for any and every opportunity to include the E15 measure in upcoming must-pass legislation.
Legislation was stuck from stopgap funding in December, and the oil lobby won a court battle from the first Trump term, leaving just 8 Midwest states with year-round sales. Cooper says the president's already weighed in on other E15 roadblocks.
Last fall, President Trump made it clear that his vision for expanding E15 at retail still includes, quote, letting them use existing pumps. And talks are already underway with EPA about reviving the infrastructure and labeling proposal from the final days of the first Trump administration.
Another case of New World screwworm was found in a Mexican cow south of the border. Despite that, USDA says it will not limit cattle imports from Mexico. Reuters says U.S. cattle supplies in recent months grew tight after Washington blocked Mexican livestock shipments into the U.S. in late November due to the screwworm. Welcome to Inside Agriculture on the Red River Farm Network. Effective weed control means attacking the weeds when they're small. NDSU Extension Cropping Systems Specialist Jeff Stockler made that point at the International Crop Expo in Grand Forks.
I don't want these weeds to be any more than 1.5 inches. And the two driver broadleaf weeds, we're not worried about the grasses as much. The two broadleaf weeds that are the driver of when to apply is kochia and common ragweed. They need to be somewhere between 1 inch and 1.5 inches.
That can be a big lift during the busy spring season.
Dry bean may be one of the crops that maybe drone applications might make more sense because of the timeliness that we have to get out there. And so we'll see once. There's a lot to learn about drone applications, whether they are or are not effective. But, it's something to think about and look at. But the base is you have to have a pre-PPI herbicide to start off. If you don't do that, I can't guarantee you anything.
USDA releasing its annual chicken and egg summary this week, which presents data on the number of egg layers, egg production, and the total U.S. chicken inventory as of December 1, 2024. American Farm Bureau economist Barrett Nelson said the report gave some important insight into the U.S. poultry flock.
According to this report, layers in 2024 were estimated at an average of 375 million. Now, this is down about 2% from last year. Our egg production from layers totaled 109 billion eggs, down 1%. Lastly, let's talk about the overall chicken inventory. Now, this came in at 514 million birds, down about 2% from last year.
USDA expecting a modest increase in the price of broiler chickens, egg prices taking a much more significant jump. Checking futures quotes right now, we're looking at Minneapolis wheat March. We're down 0.75 cents at 6.32 3/4. The July down 1.5 at 6.60. Chicago wheat in March down 5.75 at 5.86 1/4. And Kansas City down 7.25 in March, 6.06 1/2. Corn March up 1.5, 4.99. March soybeans up 10.5, 10.42 1/4. This is the Red River Farm Network.